This is Read On Air with Red Zell. For those passionate about books.
Hello and welcome to Read On Air, the show all about books that belongs to you. I'm your host, Red Sale, and this week, with school exams over and summer holidays ahead, Frank Cottrell Boyce reveals how the idea for his new book, Sputnik, materialised during the school run.
He stopped at the traffic lights on Formby Bypass and the whole idea for the whole book just jumped into the car.
Julia Donaldson works her magic in the R&IB studio.
It turns out that the little boy's mumbling and he's covering up his mouth, he's not looking at the fairy. And once he's learnt how to talk clearly, then all his wishes start to come true.
I find out what my daughter is reading.
Things about teenagers, some romance, mainly adventure things.
And one of our younger listeners gives me the lowdown on his top reads and some homework. That's all coming up on today's show. Frank Cottrell Boyce is part of the nation's cultural fabric. He's been a screenwriter for Coronation Street, Brookside and Doctor Who, written films for Michael Winterbottom and Danny Boyle, and scripted the opening ceremony for the London 2012 Olympics. But above all, he sees himself as a writer of stories for children. His debut novel, Millions, won the 2004 Philip Carnegie Medal. And his latest, Sputnik's Guide to Life on Earth, is on this year's Carnegie shortlist. Its hero, Prez, is a care home kid fostered out to a rambunctious farming family. He might as well not be there, till Sputnik arrives. An alien who appears as a dog to all but Prez. Sputnik is on a mission to save the Earth from being shrunk as part of a pangalactic decluttering program. Together, they must prove that our planet is worth saving. Now, in an R&IB Connect Radio exclusive, for the first time anywhere in the universe ever, we have a clip from the forthcoming audiobook. You might recognise the narrator's voice. He too has had to save the Earth more than once or twice.
I don't know why I answered the door. It wasn't even my own door. By then I was staying at the children's temporary accommodation. But in the summer, they put you with a family. They put me on a farm called Stramody with a family called the Blythes. It's right down near Knockbrecks. When Mrs. Rowland from the temporary dropped me off, she said, "This is Prez. He's a good boy, but he doesn't talk much. He's very helpful. But perhaps best not to let him near your kitchen knives."
"When you say he doesn't talk..."
"Hasn't said a word in months."
"Just exactly what we need," said the dad. "Someone to balance out our Jesse. Jesse does enough talking for 10 families."
"That's one good thing about not talking, by the way. You don't have to work out what to call the mum and dad. You can't call them mum and dad because they're not your mum or your dad. Calling them Mr. and Mrs. whatever would be weird, and calling them by their first names is even weirder."
Frank Cottrell Boyce, welcome to Read On Air. What was the inspiration for the story of Sputnik?
I was taking my daughter for a drive on a Saturday morning. I was taking her to a lesson, and we stopped at the traffic lights on Formby Bypass, and the whole idea for the whole book just jumped into the car. Like an eager dog, it just jumped into the car, and I turned around to my daughter before the lights changed and said, "What about, you know, if there's a person but everyone else thinks it's a dog?" And she went, "Oh, that's good." And I started writing it that afternoon. It's the only time I've ever had an experience like that. I normally have to really churn myself up to get any kind of idea at all, but that one just popped into my head, just the way that Sputnik popped into Prez's life.
Canine inspiration, I suppose.
Hey!
Without giving away any spoilers, I love the idea that Sputnik discovered Laika, the first cosmonaut dog to be launched into space by the Russians.
I've always been really interested in the story of Laika. Laika is the first mammal to leave this planet. She was sent off into space by the Soviet Space Agency in a tiny, tiny rocket called Sputnik 2. And of course, she died very sadly, although lots of other Soviet space dogs returned safely to Earth. And I've become very interested in all the dogs in space. But it did occur to me that if you were an alien and you intercepted that rocket, a rocket, and the crew were dogs, you would assume that dogs built that rocket. And you would assume that the dominant species on Earth was dogs. And then if you came to Earth and found that, you know, dogs, by and large, lived in houses. People made food for them. People took them for walks. People cleaned up their poo for them. You would carry on thinking that dogs were the number one species on planet Earth.
I think that's a fantastic piece of lateral thinking. And the sort of joyous, anarchic thinking that comes through the book and the tradition that you're writing in is just keeping the imagination open. It's almost as if the adult mind closes itself to that kind of thinking.
I mean, I do read a lot of adult novels and I do enjoy them, but what thrills me about children's literature and also about science fiction is that big question of what if. You know, the best children's books are like great thought experiments where they go, what if, you know, well, wouldn't it be great if, and they kind of put a proposal in front of you and it's huge and it makes you look at the world differently and think differently. And that's what I really, really like about children's fiction.
And it allows you just to have joyous, riotous fun. I love the idea of reverse dynamite to recreate things that have been destroyed.
I love that Sputnik's got all these gadgets and devices which are basically the same gadgets and devices that we've got, only he's read the manual. We never read the manual. He's read the manual. He discovers that they can do, all, you know, your television and your fridge can do all these amazing things, which is kind of the world we're living in. You know, we're living on the edge of the Internet of Things, you know, that fridges and washing machines are about to become much more intelligent. And so that's already happened for Sputnik. He can talk to fridges and he can talk to... He has a great conversation with the automatic checkout in the supermarket.
Yeah. No, the sense of fun really comes through the book, and I was giggling away and actually rather sad that my children are now in their late teens, so I couldn't sit down and read it with them. I love the quote that I read recently that reading frees you from the prison of the present.
Yeah.
And that you need to do that with someone. You've obviously always read to your children, have you?
Yeah, I think reading aloud is such a powerful thing. And a lot of the time when we talk about reading, we talk as if it's a solitary activity. And it can be, and that's lovely. And I'm standing in the bedroom that I grew up in, and I remember being tucked up in bed and reading to myself, and that was lovely. But I also remember being in this bed with my dad reading to me. And lots of the kind of best experiences I've had of reading have been someone reading to me, whether it was my parent or a teacher, or Jack and Ori, which is an amazing series, which was phenomenal. And I still, sometimes if I read a book now to my children that I first came across being read to me on Jack and Ori, I can still hear the voice of Kenneth Williams reading it, or Bernard Cribbins, or one of these great readers coming to me. And there's something really magic about the human voice and the way it brings words to life. And there's also something really magic about sharing a reading experience, which I see my kids did have that because they grew up with Harry Potter. And the great thing about Harry Potter after book three was that everybody read it on the same night. You know, they all queued up to buy it. They all read it the same night and they all went into school the next day and went, what happened? So that whole thing of like sharing reading is really important, I think.
And storytelling is an oral tradition. It takes us back to sitting around the campfire.
And reading quietly to yourself is a very modern idea. You know, when Dickens was publishing those great books, when Dickens was publishing Nicholas Nickleby and Great Expectations, somebody bought a copy and read it out to lots of other people. Nobody ever just went into a corner and read it to themselves.
And Dickens used to get great joy out of reading his own books.
Oh, exactly. I mean, he was a great performer, a brilliant, brilliant mimic. And he would do all the voices. And really, those Dickens novels, they're really the score for a public performance. They're not dead words on a page.
Have you ever considered narrating the audiobook versions of your own books?
Well, I would love to, and I really do enjoy reading them out loud. But in the case of Sputnik, I have to say, I wouldn't want to, because the person who's been chosen to read Sputnik is Peter Capaldi, the Doctor himself. So it couldn't be better, really.
Even if you did want to speak Prez, you wouldn't get a word in. This is the House of Blether.
He was not joking. Mostly they talk so much and so loud, you can't tell who's saying what. Though mostly, it's Jessie.
Everyone to the kitchen! Wait a minute!
No, no more minutes. We've waited long enough.
I hate baked potatoes.
Say hello to Prez.
Who's Prez? Oh, hi.
It's not a restaurant.
I hate sitting here.
No phones at the dinner table.
Then they all drop their heads and say a prayer very quietly. But the second they've said amen, they all start shouting again. Ray, do not reach for the water. Ask someone to pass it.
Prez, that big boy is Ray. The little girl is Annabelle. And this is Jesse.
He's staying for the summer. He normally lives with his granddad. But why do you live with your granddad? Why do you live with your mother? Prez doesn't like to talk. Why doesn't he like to talk?
He's not allowed near knives. Some people just do live with their granddads, that's all. Not everyone lives with their mum.
Why aren't you allowed knives? Did you stab someone? Jesse, it's really rude to ask people if they've ever stabbed people.
And you said at the beginning that you tested out the story on your daughter on the way back from school. Do you read the stories to your children before you send them to the agent or the publisher?
I do now. I didn't used to, but I do now. And they are harsh critics, but they're good. But they're kind as well.
And do you listen to audiobooks yourself?
Oh, I do. I've got my Audible subscription, and it's just on all the time. I love listening to audiobooks. They're kind of a real lifeline for me, actually. And at the moment, my dad is very ill, so we sit and we listen to... I've been listening to Dickens today, and it's just great. It's just a fantastic thing to have it there. I think listening is something we really undervalue in our society. You know, the ability to listen. Listening is a great skill.
Folk think that if you're not talking, you're not listening. But that's not true. For instance, I was the only one who heard the doorbell the night that Sputnik came. It was a Wednesday. Tea was spicy chicken wings, salad and baked potatoes. We'd finished eating and everyone was clearing up in the kitchen. The doorbell rang. The family didn't hear it, because they were all shouting.
Why is everyone shouting?
The radio is too loud. We have to shout to be heard.
No, the radio is loud so I can hear it over the shouting. If there wasn't shouting, the radio would be quiet.
The doorbell rang again. I never answer doors, because answering doors means you have to speak to someone, sometimes a stranger even. The doorbell rang again. Then I thought, what if it's my granddad? I used to live with my granddad. But he got into a wee spot of bother and had to be taken away. That's how I ended up in the children's temporary. They said that if Granddad could get himself sorted out, he would be allowed to come back and I could go and live with him again. Maybe this was Granddad. All sorted out and coming to take me back to the flat in Traquair Gardens. Maybe I was going home. So I answered the door. But it wasn't Granddad. It was Sputnik.
Frank Cottrell Boyce, thank you so much for coming onto the show and giving us an insight into your life as a writer. I'm sure the listeners, like me, wish you all the best of luck at this year's Carnegie Awards.
Thank you very much. It was an honour and a pleasure.
As in previous years, you can find all the shortlisted titles for the 2017 Slip Carnegie Medal in the RNIB Library, where, thanks to a long-standing agreement between the organisers and the RNIB, the books are available in Braille, giant print and on audio, so that we, alongside the judges, can ponder who the winner should be. Sputnik's Guide to Life on Earth is currently available as TB405745. Although it's read by a synthetic voice, it's still brilliant. The version narrated by Doctor Who actor Peter Capaldi is on its way soon. But if you can't wait and want another great book by Frank Cottrell Boyce, why not try Cosmic, which is TB16197. One problem that arises when making audio versions of children's books is what to do about the illustrations. It's something Robert Kirkwood was keen to discover when Julia Donaldson came to the RNIB studios.
Julia Donaldson paid a visit to the Talking Book Studios to record for us her book, Freddy and the Fairy, and I was with her every step of the way.
Hello, I'm Julia Donaldson, and I'm going to read Freddy and the Fairy. I just got here on the train, and after I had a piece of toast and a cup of tea for breakfast. Is that around?
That's fine, that sounds awful nice, actually.
Freddy and the Fairy by Julia Donaldson. This book is produced by RNIB. Freddy found a fairy tangled in a tree.
Help! I'm stuck!
The fairy cried. So Freddy set her free.
Thank you.
As with all talking books, especially children's books, where characterisation is perhaps more important, there was debate over the characters' voices.
Yeah, I'm quite pleased with that. The only thing I find a bit difficult is Freddie's voice. You know, I think I'm doing Freddie's voice. I mean, I don't want him to be too unpleasant. You know, he is a bit of a brat, quite, I suppose. You know, he's. Let me just think. I wish I had a pet. I'd rather have a dog. Do you think something a bit more like that? Uh-huh. A little rather than, I wish I had.
Yeah, maybe that's a little bit,
quite so deep.
My name is Bessie Bell. I'll grant you all your wishes, though I can't hear very well. Freddie thought, then mumbled, I wish I had a pet. Why, so you shall, said Bessie Bell, and conjured up a net.
Freddie and the Fairy is being recorded for blind and partially sighted listeners, but the book itself is actually about hearing problems. Julia explains more.
It's actually a book about a deaf fairy. I'm a bit deaf myself. And I had this idea ages ago of a fairy just muddling up wishes. I thought that'd be quite funny. And a little boy wishing, say, for a dog and getting something totally different. Mm. Originally, I was going to have the fairy just mixing up different people's wishes. And then actually one of my sons said to me, Mum, why don't you make the fairy deaf, and then she could just mishear the wishes. So when the fairy, when the boy wishes for a dog, he gets a frog. When he wishes for a cat, he gets a bat, and so on. But the story's got a moral, because it turns out that the little boy's mumbling and he's covering up his mouth. He's not looking at the fairy. And once he's learnt how to talk clearly, then all his wishes start to come true.
A problem arose as we got to the end of the book.
The very ending of the book shows just in the pictures that Freddie is wishing for a caterpillar, and the fairy, probably just mischievously by this stage, she gives him a gorilla and says she pretends she hasn't heard, and he gets a gorilla, and that's just quite a funny picture. But it's just shown in the book in thought bubbles. So I thought, well, how can I do this? How can I get this over in a purely audio version?
A number of solutions as to how to convey the ending were discussed, including an audio description of the pictures.
The only trouble with that for this book is because it's such a right. Well, yeah, in a way, it's the only instance.
It's just the one at the end.
And also because it's a rhyming, you know, I wouldn't want. You know, if it's not a rhyming book, then that'd be fine. Like, you do get books. I saw a book once, which is about an imaginary friend. Mm. And it says, you know, every time Jane went to the park, Mr. Monkey came too. And you just see, there's just a picture of Jane going to the park, you know. And then it says, you know, when Jane went to school, Mr. Monkey sat in the seat next to her. And you can't see. And you sort of realise that Mr. Monkey is an imaginary friend. But if you couldn't see, you would imagine that Mr. Monkey was in the pictures, and you wouldn't, you know, so then you would need someone to explain. Though that would be the way to do it. Another voice just at the end said, and everything he wishes for comes true.
I wish I had a caterpillar.
Or very nearly. He's got a gorilla. So Freddie learnt the three gold rules, and now he speaks quite clearly, and everything he wishes for comes true. Oh, oh, meow, meow, oh, I wish I had a caterpillar. Or very nearly. Oh, no, I've got a gorilla. I don't know if that would work like that. And of course, you could just say at the end, in the pictures in the book, Freddie was wishing for a caterpillar. He ended up getting a gorilla. And I thought that, well, I just didn't think that would be that great. And so I actually sat down in this building, in the building with the recording studios, and I wrote an extra verse saying, I can't remember actually what the, I can't remember off the heart, but I've written a special extra verse for this audio recording.
Now, Freddie, said the Fairy Queen. She sounded kind but stern. Before you wish again,
there are three rules for you to learn. Rule one, you mustn't mumble. Rule two, don't turn away. The fairy needs to see your lips to read the words you say. Rule three, don't cover up your mouth. She can't see through your hand. Obey these three gold rules, and then I'm sure she'll understand. So, Freddy learnt the three gold rules, and now he speaks quite clearly, and everything he wishes for comes true, or very nearly. A dog, a cat, a bird, a mouse. What next? A caterpillar? The fairy laughed and conjured up a super-sized gorilla.
When we had finished recording all the audio for the book, Julia joined me for a chat and I asked her about the start of her writing career.
Well, and I don't know if you want me to go right back to when I was at school, because I just always loved writing really from the time I learnt physically to write. And I do remember when I was at primary school, and I must have only been about five, and I wrote a story about a rabbit who was running away from a farmer and hid behind this shop counter, but his ears were poking up, and the farmer saw his ears and thought they were his ears, but the shopkeeper said, oh no, that's two carrots. And so even at the age of five, I was writing stories about trickster animals.
And I believe your first book, A Squash and a Squeeze, actually came from a song that was written for TV.
That's right, because, I wrote songs really for about 20 years before I wrote books. I used to write lots of songs for programmes like Play School, Play Days, Play Away. And A Squash and a Squeeze was a song I wrote based on an old Jewish folk tale. And it was done on television. And many years later, I got this phone call out of the blue from a publisher saying, could they use the words of that song as a picture book? So that's how I got started in books.
What sort of songs were you asked to write then?
All sorts of really strange things. I mean, they would phone me up. They always seemed to want two songs, you know, which was quite good fun, actually, because when you got as far as you could with one, you'd go over to the other and you'd be sort of juggling them around. So, like, one time they said, could I write one song about silly slippers and another song about crumpling up bits of wrapping paper and throwing them into the bin? So I never turned anything down.
Now, with your picture books, how does the process work? Are you and, say, Axel Schaefer, who illustrated the Gruffalo, are you in the same room? Or are you?
No, not at all. I mean, he doesn't really even know whether I'm writing a new book, what it would be about. So I write completely on my own, and I don't even send the text to Axel. I'll send it to my editor, and she's the intermediary, she's the go-between. And then when Axel's doing the pictures, I'm not breathing down his neck either. You know, it's quite a separate process.
Do you ever get the illustrations back and think, that's not how I pictured him?
Well, of course, it's not going to be how you picture it. I think it's a bit like when you go on a holiday, you probably think, oh, Menorca's going to be like this, or, you know, this safari park's going to be like that. And when you get there, it's never exactly as you've imagined it. But before long, you adjust to what you've actually got. So it's the same, really, with the illustrations.
Now, you're famous for your picture books, but you've also written books for older people, the Giants and the Joneses, and even older with Running on the Cracks. Will you ever write an adult novel?
If I did, I'd love to do something like Ruth Rendell. I really admire the crime writer Ruth Rendell, but especially her more psychological novels. I'd love to do something like that, but I don't really think I'm quite observant enough. A lot of my books are really quite fable-like, and it's difficult to explain, but anyway, it's very difficult to clear the decks as well. I just have such a busy life. That's my excuse anyway. It's so important for books to be available in audio. Children start off, before they can read, don't they? They start off hearing stories, hearing their parents telling stories. And I see audiobooks as being a wonderful continuation of that tradition. I was really shocked when I read that only a quite small percentage of the total number of books that there are available for blind people. And of course, when you want to write a book, you want everyone to get it. You're not trying to write for just the sighted section of the population. I think it's absolutely vital that people who are blind can get the stories.
Talking Books on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks to Robert and to Julia Donaldson. A wide selection of her wonderful books is available in a range of formats from the RNIB library, including The Gruffalo, Room on the Broom, and of course that exclusive version of Freddy and the Fairy, which is TB18886.
RNIB, supporting people with sight loss.
The RNIB Newsagent Service, which delivers the latest news, magazines and stories in a range of accessible formats to people with sight loss, is now free for under 16s. Reading can make the world of difference, and it's vital that all blind and partially sighted children can access the same content as their sighted peers in a fun and creative way. Current titles in the RNIB Newsagent Service include BBC Horrible Histories, First News, Aquila, National Geographic and RNIB Blast Off. Formats include audio CD or USB, email or Braille. To register for RNIB Newsagent, please call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email us at helpline@rnib.org.uk.
You're listening to Read On Air, your one-stop shop for book news, reviews and interviews. We love to know what you're reading and hear your suggestions for titles we should feature on the show. Simply drop us a line by emailing readonair@rnib.org.uk. One listener who did just that is Callum. At 10 years old, he's a voracious reader, and he was keen to tell us about the great audiobooks he's been enjoying. He and his dad, Tim, came into the London studio, and Callum began by telling me about the Artemis Fowl series by Owen Colfer.
How does one describe Artemis Fowl? Various psychiatrists have tried and failed. The main problem is Artemis's own intelligence. He bamboozles every test thrown at him. He has puzzled the greatest medical minds and sent many of them gibbering to their own hospitals. There is no doubt that Artemis is a child prodigy. But why does someone of such brilliance dedicate himself to criminal activities? This is a question that can be answered only by one person, and he delights in not talking.
So Artemis Fowl is basically a kid who lost his father to the Russian mafia, and he finds out about a whole world of fairies, and basically he wants to get money to try and search for his father. And so he tries to basically get money by kidnapping a fairy and then holding her for ransom.
Gosh, so it really is, it's a mixture of real life and fantasy then?
Yeah. I would really suggest Rick Riordan to any kid who likes mythology, because he basically just mixes mythology into modern, and it just is really funny. So, like, his chapters are like, one of his chapters' name is, yep, this guy's dad definitely, his car is definitely a UFO. That is literally one of the names of one of the chapters in the Norse books.
Brilliant. It sounds like a very entertaining series.
Yeah. And they coincide with each other because, say, sometimes the Norse and the Greek series mix, because the main character in the Norse series is cousin to one of the main characters in the Greek series. And also, there was a special one where he combined the demigod and magicians from Greek and Egyptian. And so it was basically when one of the evil souls from the Egyptian series was trying to make the Greek and the Egyptian people fight each other, and then it basically happened, so they teamed up to beat him.
The next morning, Chiron moved me to cabin 3. I didn't have to share with anybody. I had plenty of room for all my stuff. The Minotaur horn, one set of spare clothes, and a toiletry bag. I got to sit at my own dinner table, pick all my own activities, call lights out whenever I felt like it, and not listen to anybody else. And I was absolutely miserable. Just when I'd started to feel accepted, to feel I had a home in Cabin 11 and I might be a normal kid, or as normal as you can be when you're half-blood, I'd been separated out as if I had some rare disease. Nobody mentioned the Hellhound, but I got the feeling they were all talking about it behind my back. The attack had scared everybody. It sent two messages. One, that I was the son of the sea god. And two, monsters would stop at nothing to kill me. They could even invade a camp that had always been considered safe.
So you're also learning an awful lot about Roman history whilst being entertained by what sounds like a really brilliant story.
Yeah, it's... Rick Riordan does a lot of stories about mythology, Greek, Roman, Egyptian and Norse.
And you prefer to read your books by listening to them rather than actually picking up a paper copy, do you?
Yes, because basically it's just a whole lot easier.
And do you think you're reading them much more quickly because you're listening to them?
Or... Yes.
Yeah. And how many audiobooks do you think you listen to every month?
Every month? That's a tricky one because I don't read... I mainly only read a few new audiobooks every month because my mum did it up because my mum and dad aren't made of money. And so basically I can't get every new audiobook I'd like to get, but it's just really fun to read them and they're just really good.
Yeah, no, I love audiobooks. I couldn't live without audiobooks. There is something wonderful about having a story read to you. It reminds me of when I was your age, actually, when my mum and dad used to read to me. So, do your mum and dad ever read to you?
Yes, every evening.
And is that better than listening to audiobooks or not quite so good?
Not quite so good because with audiobooks, it just sounds a whole lot better with the same, with, because there's really good actors playing. Well, sometimes they're really good actors because, and sometimes they don't get the same actors for the same series because in the Heroes of Olympus, I listened to the first book and then in the last book, they changed the person who was telling it.
That's very annoying when you get all the way through a series and then they change the actor at the last minute because you've got used to the voice, haven't you?
Well, for the first book I got the first person and then the second and third my dad read to me.
Ah, right, okay.
And then on the final one, honestly my dad was doing the best because... Usually it's more like the actors are doing better, but for this it's just that my dad was doing better because their voices were just... Hello. They didn't give any difference in the voice to the voices. It was just always the same voice for the different characters.
Well, actually, I've got your dad here, and that's praise indeed coming from Callum. You clearly love the fact that he is listening to as many books and getting such a broad range of knowledge from all the books that he's listening to.
Absolutely. I mean, he's an avid listener. He's also an avid reader. And he particularly enjoys the imagination that these stories develop. And he loves the mythology. He reads a lot of myths and legends anyway. And a lot of these stories also appeal to me because I was a great fan of particularly the Greek and Roman mythologies when I was his age. And it's great to see an author who is developing these myths and legends into a very contemporary setting. and they're extremely appealing, I think, to all ages as well.
I must say, one of the joys of doing this programme is that I get introduced to books that I might not otherwise read. And I think that some of the young adult fiction out there is actually rather superior to some of the stuff on offer for adults. It's imaginative, it crosses genres, and it's exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been listening to a lot of books for long journeys. And we listened to a 7-book series, I think, The Chronicles of Ancient Darkness, which starts with a wolf brother, read by Sir Ian McClellan, and they were gripping, absolutely amazing.
Well, I was going to come on to that, because I believe that this is my recommendation. We have a section called Educating Red on Read On Air, and your mum told me, Callum, that you were going to recommend the series to me. So can you tell me a little bit about it?
Okay, so it starts off with Torak, who is the main character, his dad and him get attacked by a bear, which basically just rips up everything in its path, and it was playing with them. It literally came into the clearing that they were in, ripped up everything, and left without taking the kill.
That's not natural. Yeah. And when are these books set?
They're set in the time when the world was just one massive forest with maybe a few islands off in the sea.
And I haven't read too much of it yet, but I understand it's a book about a quest.
Yes. The quest is to defeat the bear, which is actually possessed by a demon. So that's why it's acting so unnaturally. And it basically makes it super-powered. And they have a time limit. So when the Auroch moon, I'm pretty sure it's called, rises, that's when demons are strongest. They will become unstoppable.
Well, I have a long journey ahead of me next weekend. So I shall take Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver, is it?
Yes, Michelle Paver.
I shall take a copy of that with me on my iPod and I shall look forward to listening to it. Callum and Tim, thank you so much for joining me in the Read On Air studio and giving me what sounds like a fantastic Educating Red suggestion.
You're welcome.
So that was last week. Now I've got my nose stuck into Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver and I'll be reviewing it in a future show.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Do you get stuck when it comes to technology? Don't worry. Help is at hand with RNIB's Technology Support Squad. We can give you advice over the phone or visit you at home to help you master your technology. Help is at hand, from setting up a mobile phone and getting the most out of it to using the accessibility features on your PC. Or maybe you need help with your Daisy talking book player. You can email technologysquad@rnib.org.uk and we'll get right back to you. Or call our helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. Get the most out of your technology with RNIB's Technology Support Squad.
RNIB Library has all the latest reading titles in a format that suits your needs. You choose the books, you choose the format, we deliver to your door. Follow us on Twitter at RNIB Library or find us on Facebook.
You're listening to Read On Air on RNIB Connect Radio.
And to prove that it's not just me who loves reading children's books, here's narrator Rachel Atkins speaking in a break between recording sessions at the RNIB studios.
This is an RNIB talking book.
A conversation with narrator Rachel Atkins.
Children's books, I really love reading because a lot of those are extremely well written. In fact, there was one I read by Sally Gardner, I, Coriander. Wonderful book. Really so imaginative. I mean, that was great. But I think those can be done for children or adults. It's just when they're just so well written and just so imaginative and just big, big characters, those sort of fantasy fairy tale. Wonderful. And I did go the full I think I did go the full thing on the characters in that one, because each character was very, very strongly created, so therefore you felt you had to give a bit more of a voice to them.
It is night, and our old house by the river is finally quiet. The baby has stopped its crying and been soothed back to sleep. Only the gentle lapping of the Thames can be heard outside my window. London is wrapped in a deep sleep, waiting for the watchman to call in the new day. I have lit the first of seven candles to write my story by. On the table next to me is the silk purse that holds my mother's pearls, and beside it is the ebony casket whose treasure I am only now beginning to understand. Next to that, shining nearly as bright as the moon, stands a pair of silver shoes. I have a great many things to tell of how I came by the silver shoes, and more. And this being my story and a fairy tale besides, I will start once upon a time. The work is very different because you're on your own in a studio just reading. And sometimes it's fantastic when it's well written and it just flows, and other times it can be extremely hard work. And it's not always the books that are beautiful to read to yourself that are easy to put across vocally. They've created such a lovely space here. I don't know, the people they've got are really warm, lovely, and it's a joy because you don't earn much money. You don't do it for the money. You come to work with really lovely people. No, it's good fun.
Talking Books on RNIB Connect Radio.
And as she heads back into the studio to narrate another great title for us to enjoy, it's time to introduce you to my next guest. Like many parents this week, I took part in a Bring Your Daughter to Work Day. And since Callum has already given us the boys' point of view, this seemed like a great opportunity to find out what the girls are reading. So here's Megan, who's 14. Welcome to my workplace.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, you've always been a keen reader. Can you remember the books that first got you enthusiastic about reading?
I think the first books that got me enthusiastic about reading were The Famous Five, which I used to listen to as audiobooks with my sister. I think they were what really got me into adventure stories and mysteries. I really loved trying to figure out who had done whatever it was in that particular book in the series. And I just really enjoyed seeing how the characters tried to figure out the mysteries.
And of course, we listened to those on audio book because I couldn't read to you because my sight had gone by then. And it was lovely. We all sat down and listened to them again and again and again, didn't we?
Yeah, and I think we could all enjoy them in the family. So I think that was what really got me into adventure stories. Another thing I remember listening to as a family was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, of course, which we used to listen to in the car, which is just hilarious.
And you still quite like space stories, don't you?
Yeah, I think space and sci-fi, that sort of thing, I don't think anyone ever really grows out of that. That's something that I'm still very intrigued by.
And I remember you had a lot of Julia Donaldson books as well, didn't you?
I did, yes. Room on the Broom was one of my favourites, and Charlie Cook's favourite book. I remember I could just sit down and read those again and again and again. They never really got boring.
Well, she's a guest on this week's programme as well, and she talks about how they translate the pictures into words for the RNIB talking books, which I think must be really difficult.
Yeah, that must be, because I think the illustration's always quite a big part of it for me. They're part of what makes the story, so it must be interesting to see how you can take that part away and try and add back what you took.
And I also remember that you used to listen to a brilliant book about a mermaid.
Yeah, the Emily Winsnap series by Liz Kadsler. I had the first one on audio, and I listened to it countless times. I can't remember how many times I did. I really loved how it was read, and I think I loved the fantasy element to it, how it sort of had this whole other world under the sea that the protagonist explored, and that was something that really interested me.
And we've got a clip from The Tale of Emily Winsnap by Liz Kesler, which is TB 17489 and read beautifully by Finty Williams.
Can you keep a secret? I know everyone has secrets, but mine's different. Kind of weird. Sometimes I have nightmares where I get found out and locked up in a zoo or a scientist's laboratory. It all started in year 7 when swimming lessons began. It was the first Wednesday afternoon at my new school and I was so looking forward to it. Mum hates swimming and always used to change the subject when I asked why I couldn't learn. But we live on a boat, I'd say. We're surrounded by water. Well, you're not getting me in there, she'd reply. Just look at all the pollution. You know what it's like when the day cruisers have been in. Now stop arguing and come and help me with the vegetables. She even kept me out of swimming lessons all the way through primary school. Said it was unhealthy. All those bodies mixing in the same water, she'd shudder. Not for us, thank you very much. And that would be that. End of discussion. I finally wore her down the summer before I started secondary school. All right, she sighed eventually. I give in. Just don't start trying to get me in there with you. I'd never been in the sea. I'd never even had a bath. I'm not dirty or anything. I have a shower every night, but there isn't enough room for a bath on the boat, so I'd never been totally immersed in water till the first Wednesday afternoon of year 7.
So does that bring back happy memories, Meg?
It does, yes.
And can you remember what you started reading after Emily Winsnap?
I think after Emily Winsnap, I moved on to Michael Morpurgo, those sorts of books. One of my favourite books of his was called Casper, Prince of Cats. It was about this this bellboy who worked in a hotel, and one day a very rich, very beautiful countess came to the hotel and sort of she bought her cat, Casper, although as she insisted, he was not her cat. This cat belonged to nobody. He was a prince. And the protagonist, Johnny, was an orphan, was sort of taken under the wing of this countess. She was a bit like a mother figure to him. And when she died quite suddenly, he has to take care of this cat. And from one thing to another, he ends up stowing away on the Titanic with the cat. And it's a very fun story. It's also quite touching. And I think I really enjoyed seeing the adventures of this boy and his very grumpy cat, who reminds me quite a bit of our grumpy cat.
I also remember you loved reading, was it Bob the Street Cat?
That is a great book. That was a bit older, obviously. But again, I think it reminded me quite a bit of our cat, even if Bob is a little more friendly and a little more intelligent.
Actually, I've had some really good recommendations for books from you. As listeners might remember, a few weeks back, I reviewed The Lie Tree by Frances Harding, which was a suggestion of yours. And you're quite a big Frances Harding fan, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I love her books. I love the way she writes and the way that she mixes supernatural and realistic worlds. I think it's a very unique take because usually when you're reading fantasy, it's set in a completely different world with completely different rules, whereas she just sort of feeds in fantasy elements to the real world. The first book of hers I read was Cuckoo Song, which is a book, it's set in the 1920s, about an 11-year-old girl called Triss who wakes up after an accident in which she apparently nearly drowned. However, she has no memory of the incident, and as she recovers, she realises that there's something very wrong. She keeps waking up with leaves and twigs in her hair, and she has an appetite that she just can't satisfy, and her younger sister, Pen, seems angry at her for something and won't talk to her. And the book basically focuses on her trying to find out what happened to her, and as she does so, she uncovers secrets within her family and just about the whole world that she thought she knew.
She tried to hide in the attic. I'm not coming. It was hard to make out Pen's words. Her tantrums were seldom a matter of pouting and foot stamping. Instead, she screamed herself hoarse, a few half-comprehensible words lost in the tornado of her rage.
See, she's lying. Can't make me sit with her. Hate you all.
Triss slipped into the back seat through one door, and Pen was bundled in next to her through the opposite door. Once there, Pen curled herself into a tight, hostile ball, flinched up against the door so as to be as far from Triss as possible.
Cuckoo Song by Francis Harding is TB21758. Sounds spooky.
It is. It, much like Velaitri, it has that very unnerving atmosphere to it, which I really love in her books, because you as the reader are just as in the dark as the protagonist, Triss, when you're trying to discover what exactly happened to her. And I think that's very... It's really puts you in her shoes, and it's got this whole just very mysterious feel to it. As you on the as it seems like it's just a normal family in the 1920s trying to cope with the aftermath of the First World War, and as you go deeper you realise that there are supernatural elements tied in and all of the different things that have led up to the accident.
It sounds like that's another really good educating read suggestion from you, Meg.
Yes, well, I think you'd really enjoy it.
Fantastic. Well, I shall search that one out in the RNIB Talking Books library. Now, you don't just get to read for pleasure. You also have to read books for your English GCSE. So have you read anything good that school has set you to read?
I think one of my favourite books that I've been made to read for school recently was The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. It's an American book set in roughly the 1960s about gang violence. It focuses on two different gangs. You've got the Greasers, who are the poor kids who have to work hard for not very much at all. They wear leather jackets and have long hair, aren't really respected. And then the Socs, so the Socials, who are the rich kids who can get away with anything because they've got the money to cover it up. The book focuses around this boy called Pony Boy, who's, I think, 14 years old, and about how he's a greaser and how he and his sort of found family of kids in his gang cope with everything that's going on when somebody takes it a bit too far in the feud between the two gangs. It's how all of the kids try and deal with the aftermath. I think the book definitely puts you in the shoes of the characters and you can empathise with all of them, even though they've done terrible things, because you can see that the environment they've grown up in is what has made them into the sort of slightly cruel children that they are in the book. It's a very touching book and very powerful when you realise that, though it's fiction, these are legitimate problems that were faced by people in gangs back then, and to some extent it still exists today. And I think the fact that the author published it when she was 17, and I think that shows in a good way, because it really, the teenagers feel like very real characters. The way they act is like normal teenagers, and it really puts you in the perspective of what it would be like to grow up in that sort of violent environment.
That sounds like a great choice by your English teacher.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we got to read it, because I'm not sure if I would have read it otherwise.
It occurred to me then that they could kill me. I went wild. I started screaming for soda, dare ya anyone. Someone put his hand over my mouth and I bit it as hard as I could, tasting the blood running through my teeth. I heard a muttered curse and got slugged again, and they were stuffing a handkerchief in my mouth. One of them kept saying, "Shut him up, for Pete's sake, shut him up!" Then there were shouts and the pounding of feet, and the Socs jumped up and left me lying there, gasping. I lay there and wondered what in the world was happening. People were jumping over me and running by me, and I was too dazed to figure it out. Then someone had me under the armpits and was hauling me to my feet. It was Derry.
"Are you all right, Pony Boy?"
A clip from The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton, read by Christopher Ragland, which is TB21286. So, the long summer holidays are coming up. Have you got a stack of books that you're going to sit down and read? Anything that you're really looking forward to?
I've been making a list. Unfortunately, my reading has been hindered by exams. So every time someone's recommended me a book, I've written it down. At the moment, I just started a book called Ready Player One, which is set in the future about virtual reality. My sister read it. I've only gotten little bit through, but so far it seems very fun, packed full of 80s references, and I'm really looking forward to reading more of that. other things. I think there's quite a variety of books on my list at the moment. Things about teenagers, some romance, mainly adventure things. I'd want to read some more of Frances Harding's things because I haven't read all of her books. And yeah.
And you also, like your father, have a bit of a taste for Agatha Christie murder mysteries as well, don't you?
Oh, yes. Agatha Christie's are definitely my kind of thing. Especially when I was younger, I went for a phase of just devouring all of her books. So I should definitely read some of those over the summer. I think my favourite of hers is probably And Then There Were None. It's, I think, as well as being a murder mystery, it's also a bit of an adventure story, and you sort of, because you've got all of these characters on a remote island and they know that they're being killed off one by one, and they're trying to figure out who's killing them, you're trying to figure out who it is, and it's very interesting when you think that any one of the characters that you get attached to could be the murderer, and with each one that's killed, it's narrowing it down to the characters, and when you're looking at your favourite characters of characters you think could do no wrong and thinking, well, possibly they could be the one who's killing people off. It's a very interesting book and I think my favourite of hers.
Fantastic. Well, there are some great recommendations for the summer holidays for anybody who hasn't read any of those titles. Megan, thank you so much for joining me in the studio, and I'll look forward to next year's Bring Your Daughter to Work Day.
Well, thank you. I've had a great time, and it definitely beats just sitting in someone's office like many of my friends have been forced to do.
Thanks, Megan. Most of her selections are available from the RNIB library in a range of formats, including the talking books we've played clips from. Would you like to come onto the show and talk about the books that you love? Why not drop us a line by emailing readonair@rnib.org.uk? We'd love to hear from you. So, that's all we have time for this week. My thanks to Frank, Julia, Callum and Megan, and to everyone who's been in touch about the titles you've been enjoying and your ideas for books that I should read. Next week, we'll be taking a look at some great American exports. So, if you've got any suggestions for titles you think that we should feature or want to get in touch about anything that you've heard or read, I'm just an email away. Until then, thanks for listening and remember to read on.